the Turks, Cenk Uygur, True North with you guys today. John is back. He's got his 28th nickname. He's also Johnny Tai today.
That's true.
Okay. The Viking beard is gone. You still have a beard of sorts. But not anywhere near where you
said. No, this is just the scruff I always had.
Yeah, that's just scruff. That's
first
not true
thing
north.
When I got home. Shaving off that beard.
That beard, man, that was some True North stuff, man. It really was.
It was bigger before I went back because I took this little break in the middle of the 2 months. It didn't get back because I trimmed it a little bit. It didn't get back up to what it was when I first got back. But if you follow me on Instagram, I took a picture when I had trimmed it down on only half my face. And it looks ridiculous. So go subscribe to that and upload it soon.
You know what? I follow you on Instagram.
You
I'm
do?
Looking forward to that picture.
Oh, it's coming up soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, John went to the North Pole. We thought we were done with him.
Technically, but
yeah, well, close. Whatever. Close enough. Okay. he went true north and almost got to the pole. The name of the show that he's going to be starring in is True North. That's why I keep saying that. It's going to be on Verizon Go 90. It isn't anywhere near done yet. So,
couple
that's
months.
Okay. Yeah. Couple months. Like he's done shooting it, but they have to edit it, etc. So it's good to have you back. You were gone on.
Good to be back. Missed it.
We partly sent you up there so that in case the planet melted down, that you would be the lone survivor.
And me and Shabala.
That's right. And now you have come back, and the planet is in mid melting down.
Yeah, you guys didn't. I thought she would get a hold of the natural disasters while I was gone.
No,
she didn't really make any headway.
No, it's rough. We've gone in the wrong direction, which leads us to our first story.
Okay, well, why don't we talk about that then? The wildfires that have been devastating Northern California have continued on until when we're filming this video. It's still going. And we're going to reveal some of the numbers associated with these fires. Numbers of people killed and missing, acres destroyed and all of that. And they're difficult to grasp because we don't expect, in Northern California, you expect, they're going to get a hold of it. But it's been getting worse day by day. And it's especially difficult because it is still ongoing. And those numbers are almost certainly going to go up. Because things like searching for people, that isn't even really happening yet because they're still trying to contain the fire itself. So we're going to show you video and we're going to show you pictures. But first, just a quick update. So far, as of filming time, nearly 170,000 acres have burned. More than 500 people are missing in one county alone. And I've read that more than 100 are missing in other counties. 21 people have already died in the fires. More than 50,000 acres are burning in just those two counties. Actually, I have family living in Sonoma County. And at least 1,500 homes have been destroyed, although that number is, like the others, premature. Because these are areas that have been destroyed. Some of them it's difficult to know exactly how many because the damage has been so thorough. And you'll see in the video, maybe we can start to roll it as we talk.
Yeah.
And that it's not, you don't have the burned frames of buildings. You don't have some damage to buildings. You have complete destruction of buildings with little or nothing left in most cases.
Oh my God, it looks like a nuke hit it. Even with a nuke, some things would still be left standing. So some updates right before we came on air. It's now, was 1,500 homes. It's now over 2,000 buildings that have been absolutely burned to the ground. It is now 560 people missing. If you're wondering how in the world are people dying? I mean, shouldn't we know a fire is coming well before it does? Well, in this case, no, because there is huge winds and they are spreading the embers throughout the area and it's jumping to places they didn't expect. And so some of the stories of how folks died in the fire is absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So here, I'll tell you two of them right now. One was a 28-year-old guy in a wheelchair and he couldn't get out. And so it jumped to his building. Another case, they were fine, but to give you a sense of the speed, so they were in their home, they were fine. Next thing you know, there's the fires jumped to their backyard, and they're like, Jesus, what the hell's going on? They get their 11-month-old kid out, they get the wife, the husband, and the brother out, and then they said within 5 minutes it was gone. It was the
whole
house thing
was gone.
Yeah, destroyed. Yeah. Okay, like it had jumped in the house, and then thank God
really
they got
fast.
Out.
Here you're seeing the beginning of a few. Before and after shots of particular buildings or areas, how they looked immediately before and immediately after the fire.
Yeah. And then what absolute heartbreaking story of a couple that had known each other for 90 years, literally. One was 100, the other one was 98. The gentleman was a World War II hero and he had lived through that. And they'd met each other when they were in grade school, got married, had lived together for all that time. he died trying to get her out of the fire. Wow. And they both died in the fire. So this is among the worst fire disasters in California history. In one area alone, the Tubbs wildfire in Sonoma County, in this particular incident, 11 were killed. That's the sixth deadliest fire in recorded California history. And our technology is a lot better than it used to be in terms of forecasting, yeah, in terms of being able to put out fires, and still it's one of the deadliest fires in history.
Yeah. Yeah, you're sitting there about the outline of Hilton.
Wow, look at that, man. That is unbelievable.
And we talked just a couple of months ago. We covered some of the large, long-term wildfires that have been going on in, I believe it was up in the Northwest and getting towards there from the Midwest. And obviously, these are devastating fires that destroy huge areas of land, often forests, and last a very long time. And those are still ongoing. Those are big problems in a lot of the parts of the country. Thankfully, some of those areas are relatively less populated, and so the death tolls tend to be lower, the number of buildings tend to be lower. I don't think that we have as much experience with densely populated areas experiencing fires of this sort. And I read a lot about why it was so devastating in this area. So partially it is the wind, but I mean, you don't think of Sonoma as being a place where, oh yeah, you know, for its wind, that's a problem. But when an area that's relatively natural still, an area with grass or a little bit of bushes, a fire sweeps through, very often it'll consume the flammable material very quickly. With grass, it can literally take just a few seconds, and then the fire is effectively dead because there's no fuel anymore. But with man-made constructions like homes and other buildings, the fire doesn't burn through very quickly. It can stay for a long time, and combined with the winds, that provides embers to fly off of the burning material for 10 minutes or 20 minutes or an hour, meaning that it tends to spread in more directions around the initial area of the fire. And so, like we said, still ongoing. Maybe we can show a few more of these graphics. You bring up 25, I believe. You're gonna see, I think, a satellite photo of one of the areas taken by NASA.
Yeah.
It's immediately after, you're seeing the amount of smoke there.
So let me give a further context here. They woke up, see, we talked about 170,000 acres burned in California. They woke up this morning and it was 70,000 more. So it was 100 and then it was 170,000 in the morning because it's literally spreading like wildfire. And so, and it just, the scope of the problem continues to shock people. It's now only 50 miles outside of San Francisco. So we're used to wildfires in areas that are sparsely populated, as John was mentioning. One of these days, that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is it's going to hit San Francisco or Los Angeles or another major city.
LA had that fire in the valley just a month ago.
Yeah, and by the way, it's in Orange County now.
Yeah.
But you know, it hasn't hit a massively populated area yet. But it will. Yeah,
imagine the evacuation troubles that we're going to have in that case.
Yeah, in one of the counties, they evacuated 25,000 people, mandatory evacuation. They evacuated everybody, and they said, "Leave everything behind. We got to go right now." Right now, evacuating 25,000 people is hard. Evacuating several million people way harder. In LA, the county and the nearby areas has 14 million people in it. So, I mean, these disasters are of epic proportions. Quick clarification, I said it was a guy, it was actually a woman, Christina Hansen, who was 28 years old and in the wheelchair that died in the fire. And the 100-year-old veteran of World War II was Charles Rippey and his wife, Sarah, who was 98. And then further scope for all of the West, 8 million acres have been burned this year alone. So in Montana, the fire raged for months and months and months. So we've talked about the wind, we've talked about the housing. Of course, the last part that is incredibly important is how dry it is.
Yeah.
And the droughts and the dry land is absolutely related to climate change. The warmer weather picks up the moisture from the ground and makes it much drier, which makes the fires more severe, longer lasting, what you're seeing in front of you, the extreme devastation, is also because of climate change.
Yeah, we could go through the whole thing. We've had to do it so many times, and unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be even more next year and more the next time. Trying to get especially Republican politicians to understand that climate change is not the caricature that they want to make it out to be. that climate change can simultaneously cause in different parts of the world dry conditions and more rain, mudslides, hotter conditions and colder conditions. It can cause all of those things. The climate is changing fundamentally, extremely and non-linearly. It's becoming worse now. That was one of the things actually on the documentary that it's great to, I do all the research and all that, but I was on a ship with the scientists trying to map why it is the ice is melting so much earlier and so much more than it used to. And they actually had some great data. This is not a thing where it's like, oh, the last 10 years have been bad, maybe the next 10 will be bad. We have no idea what the next 10 are gonna be like because it's not expanding in a way that we can easily map out. And so we're seeing the wildfires now. God only knows what story we'll be covering in 5 years in the Young Turks.
So John was just near the North Pole. That documentary is referring to as True North, which is gonna be on Verizon Go 90 in a couple of months. Look, the right wing mocked the scientists with their data and science. When they said, look, the major cities will be flooded. They said, that's not gonna happen. And then during just Superstorm Sandy, New York's ground zero area was flooded. Then Houston,
massive
unprecedented flooding in Houston. And then when the scientists said, you will have both droughts and flooding, you'll have great fires and storms. They said, how could that possibly happen at the same time? Alarmist, ridiculous. We're living in it right now. It's exactly what they predicted, and it is fire and fury. And we have messed with Mother Nature, and it's only gonna get worse. Once the ice caps melt and the methane is released, methane is worse than carbon. If you thought this is bad, buckle up and brace for impact.
Well, after that, so you're talking about fire and fury. Why don't we transition to a different type of fire and fury, this time in a non-natural form. So we know that apparently Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, called Donald Trump a moron. Well, now we know why, and it looks like Rex Tillerson was right to label him such. NBC is now reporting that Donald Trump not only wants to modernize our nuclear arsenal at the expense of $1 trillion or more, he also wants to massively and probably impossibly expand the number of nuclear weapons we have in our stockpile. This is coming from a meeting that he had with some nuclear experts. Donald Trump was apparently not happy with the steady decrease in the US stockpile of nuclear weapons that has been going on since the 1960s, and asked instead for a tenfold increase in the US's nuclear weapons. That is apparently what led to Secretary of State labeling him a moron, which is probably underselling it. Now, we want to give you some historical data because that's referencing a specific sort of decline. So let's show you this chart here where you're going to see the number of nuclear weapons, at least officially recognized, in our stockpile and the events that have led to them going up or down. And you see there that back during the scariest portions of the Cold War, when we got the closest to actual all-out nuclear war, we did indeed have between 25 or 30,000 nuclear weapons. But thankfully, as a result of international diplomacy, the work of NGOs and a number of other factors, that has steadily been decreased to the only still insane and scary number of about 4,000 nuclear weapons in the US arsenal. I don't know how you look at that and think that 4,000 nuclear weapons is not enough, but that's what he thinks.
Yeah.
Now, he said he wants a tenfold increase. But as stupid as that is, how he did it was actually stupider. The president referenced the highest number on the chart and told his team he wanted the US to have that many now. Now, you might think, well, our country is big, our military industrial complex is huge, and there's a lot of money, so I guess it's stupid, but sure, we can have them now. Except that this dummy doesn't know that we have one functioning facility that can produce nuclear weapons. And if you were to try to get to the number that he wants of 32,000 additional nuclear weapons, it would take that facility 350 years to produce all of the nuclear weapons. Now, sure, if you were to throw $5 or $10 trillion, maybe you could build some more facilities. But that's bigger than the Apollo programs. That's bigger than the Manhattan Project to build the sort of advanced nuclear weapons that we would need now. And he thinks that that's fine to just casually reference during a meeting. Don't do any research, don't learn anything. Just say that we should build 32,000 additional nuclear weapons.
So he's so childlike and ridiculous that in meetings like this, usually the staff just ignore him and the generals ignore him. They go, well, obviously we're not gonna do that. There's one expert that was quoted as saying, literally no one in the government or the military believes that is possible or desirable. Literally no one, okay? So they go, okay, the child is acting up again. Let's just walk out. And Tillerson walks out and calls him. He's like, the guy's a moron. What can we do? Let's just ignore it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now to give you a sense of scope of how stupid he is. Number one, even though we have a smaller number of weapons and the chart seems to go down, they are actually far more sophisticated than the weapons we had in the 1960s.
Yes.
So those 4,000 can destroy the world several times over. And it is a stronger arsenal, and thank God a safer arsenal than the one we had in the 1960s. So just because the number of missiles is down doesn't mean our capabilities are down. Number two, it's actually one of the things that Republicans brag about the most, that Ronald Reagan did all these arms deals, that he was strong, but he was able to do arms deals that brought us peace. Peace through strength was literally his slogan, and that's why Ronald Reagan is so great. And so he goes, all right, now let's destroy that and bring the arsenal back up for reasons that no one knows. We know what it is. I'll get to that in a second. So then, of course, the other consequence of that, well, then Russia and China are going to re-engage in the nuclear arms race. And
they wouldn't know.
And so you've now made the world far, far more dangerous. And then, of course, there's the tremendous expense. Unbelievable expense of trying to create 32,000 of the new kind of nuclear weapons that we have, which are more expensive, etc. Look, we're updating our nuclear program right now, and that's about a $1 trillion project. And that doesn't involve building 32,000 new nukes. So the scope of it is so out of bounds of reason and proportion.
It's already it's wasteful in a way that it's difficult to express. $1 trillion. I mean, sure, you could modernize these weapons that we all say we will never ever need to use or would ever use. Or theoretically, I mean, that would pay for how many times over would that pay for public college for every single American?
Yeah, I mean, this is not a close issue. But if you're a Republican and you just think about it this way, right? If there's still like the three of you left that are like, no, I'm convinced Trump's a genius, we just don't understand him, okay? So wouldn't a smart person, instead of saying, well, that's it, I see the chart, I want to have as many nukes as, you know, Eisenhower had or Nixon had, I want the nukes. Instead of doing that, wouldn't a logical smart person say, hey, just let's do a little bit of research on this, guys. I think it's giving him the benefit of the doubt. I think we might be safer if we had more nuclear weapons. I know it might seem counterintuitive, but here's my logic behind it. But guys, can you tell me how much it would cost? How many facilities do we have to make them? How long would it take to make them? Could it happen under my watch, or is it a 20-year project?
Effect would that have on other countries?
Right. What is our treaties with other countries? Would it affect those treaties?
Yeah.
These are one of many obvious questions that you would ask. Come on, guys. Even you would think to ask anybody. You're a plumber. It doesn't matter what you are. You're out of work. You're in a holler somewhere. Okay, you know that you would ask, how much does it cost? You don't just give an order. Oh, God, I don't like it that I'm at the bottom of this chart.
Yeah.
No, I want to be at the top of the chart. What kind of a maniacal fool would say something like that?
Yeah.
And he just says it like, no, go do it. What does that mean, go do it? Do what? Like, did you get it authorized? Do you have the spending? Is it in the budget? How would it affect the budget?
It's not like getting a Diet Coke. It's not like running and getting his soda. You can't just say, go spend trillions.
So the reason he wants to do it is because he wants to win. He wants to have more nukes than the other guys, which we already do. But he also wants to have more nukes than past US presidents because he wants to win.
Yeah.
But in reality, it would bankrupt the country and make us far less safe.
I think the solution is actually pretty simple. Based on right after he became president, he said, I have ordered a modernization of nuclear weapons, which was already gonna be done under President Obama. It's way too expensive, but Obama was already gonna do it. And he said, and thanks to that, we are now much stronger and safer. Even though it hasn't happened yet, it's going to take years. He thinks he ordered it already happened. So he should just order the building of 10 times more nukes. They should just say they did it and call it a day. He'll think that it happened, he'll never check. But this is very scary. I mean, other reports have said that he has looked for, quote, more usable nuclear weapons to be produced because he wants us to be able to use them without it being a big old deal. We know that he'd apparently talked to a foreign policy expert. And that foreign policy expert was shocked that he asked multiple times why it is that America can't use nuclear weapons in conflicts. Back during the campaign, if you Google the worst answer in debate history, I broke down his answer to the question by that conservative radio host.
Hugh Hewitt.
Yes, exactly, about the nuclear triad. He doesn't understand anything about anything, but particularly when it comes to nuclear weapons. And this is a guy who back in the 80s was saying that he should be put in charge of negotiations over arms control with nuclear weapons. He said he would need between 1 and 2 hours to learn everything you need to know about missiles.
Yeah.
In fact, I probably already know almost all of it.
Oh God, he's so
money. He said that decades ago.
Come on, everybody in the country knows.
I probably already know everything there is to know about missiles.
Okay, so monumentally stupid. All right, I'm gonna have fun here and end by reading you some of Trump's quotes. When he was asked by Chris Matthews on whether he would use nukes, he started to answer by saying, I'd be the last one to use nuclear weapons. Well, that sounds pretty good.
That's good, yeah.
He ended when Matthews asked him, well, what about ISIS? And can we say to the Middle East, you definitely will not use nukes? He said, well, let me explain. Somebody hits us with an ISIS, you wouldn't fight back with a nuke? Well, then no, you would be the first to use a nuke. Yeah. No.
Best case scenario, the second to use a nuke. But he still seems pretty eager.
But wait a minute, ISIS does hit us from time to time. No, that doesn't mean we launch a nuke in the middle of Iraq, which is an ally. I mean, that is such a maniacally stupid thing to say. Okay, but I'm not done yet. So when asked about the nuclear triad, the question that John was referencing, I'm going to read you what he what he said. Now, the nuclear triad, and if you don't know it, that's okay. It's you're not a necessarily,
you don't need to.
Yeah, it's you're not a military expert or political expert, etc. It's are the three different ways that we can strike with nukes: submarines, bombers, and then intercontinental ballistic missiles. Okay,
that was already better than his whole answer. Right there.
Okay. So he could have given an answer about, hey, I think we need more subs, but less bombers, whatever, right? So he obviously, of course, has no idea what the nuclear triad is, but Hugh Hewitt asked him, and here's his answer. We have to be extremely vigilant and extremely careful when it comes to nuclear. Nuclear changes the whole ball game. The biggest problem we have is nuclear. Nuclear proliferation, having some madman go out and get a nuclear weapon. That's in my opinion, that is the single biggest problem that our country faces right now.
That happened last November, actually.
That's right, when a madman got in hold of some nukes and wanted to build some more. So the biggest problem we have is nuclear. What kind of a sentence is that? What does that mean? And if the biggest problem we have is nuclear, why do you want to build 32,000 new nuclear, as you would call them? So then Hugh Hewitt goes back and tries one more time. He's like, very good, I understand the dangers of nuclear weapons that you try to explain there. But what in specific about the nuclear triad, what do you think we should do in that policy? He had just a one line answer. I think for me, nuclear is just the power. The devastation is very important to me. We've elected someone that honestly is, I mean, it's so far below average intelligence that there's some chance that, you know, he needs institutional help. And he's in charge of nuclear weapons at the White House. We gotta get him out. The guy's an absolute, I mean, I'm like borderline feel bad because he's clinical, man. He's clinical. He needs somebody to hold his hand. He's got issues.
Yeah.
He is clinically stupid.
But with thinking that, you know what's scary is it's on display. Everyone can see it. And it shows how fragile our actual democracy is, that we can have a guy who's obviously unfit to be there in charge, but because he's there, people that know better, people that know what danger there is involved, can't or won't say anything because they're like, well, he's the president. Yeah. I have to let him destroy the country. Why? So this whole how we boast for hundreds of years about how great of a nation we are and how our forefathers created this perfect nation, which they didn't, it became better, was because we actually followed the way we were supposed to do it. Now we're ready to abandon all of that for one person because he was elected by a bunch of crazy people. So after that happens, we're willing to throw it all away. It's fine just because he's there.
Well, that's why I changed my mind on the 25th Amendment. I think he has, I mean, I don't know if it's mental damage, brain damage, or he was born special. And I feel terrible saying that, but his IQ is so low that it's literally a danger to the country and to the planet.
Based on the 80s comment, this is not new.
Yeah.
He was as stupid in the 80s as he is today.
Yeah, and one more thing about what JR said. Look, guys, one, it's absolute shame on the Republicans and everybody who voted for Donald Trump that the quotes I read you from before the election, that you'd listen to a guy in a debate say, the problem is nuclear. You know, nuclear is dangerous. I know that.
The devastation is important to me.
Right. And you voted for him. Well, you raised your hand and said, I don't mind really stupid people. I relate to them. So that's on all of us as a country and certainly the people who voted for him. Okay. Yeah. But the second problem is that his opposition. Jesus Christ. How do you not break his back on that? Hillary was, you know, she ran all those attack ads, but it was all about like he's a mean guy, a bad guy. But some voters don't mind mean. What they mind, if you actually showed it to them in a way that they could understand it, is stupid. So she should have mocked him mercilessly and say, hey, Donald, what the hell does nuclear mean? What does that mean? We have to be extremely careful when it comes to nuclear. Nuclear changes the whole ball game. Okay, Donald, explain what that means. And then pause. Hey, no. That was in a Republican debate. Chris Christie, all these guys who are tough guys. Why didn't one of you stop and go, no, Donald, answer the fucking question. What is the nuclear triad? What is the nuclear triad? Yeah. You don't know what the nuclear triad is, do you?
I'll give you a hint. I'll give you a hint. There's three parts of it.
Yeah, and by the way,
you
probably
two.
Right. Name one. You don't know it. You don't know. Just say, I'm running for president and I didn't do any homework. I'm running for president and I don't know one of the most important issues there is, which is our nuclear power.
An issue that he had specifically requested decades earlier that he be put in sole charge of.
Because in 2 hours he could figure out the whole nuclear.
Okay. Wow.
Fucking moron.
We've got some fallout that's coming from NBC's reporting of that meeting when we come back from this break.
Sure. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and True with you. Iron X Ping writes in on YouTube Super Chat, climate change does affect wind speed. Interview Paul Beckwith. Okay, well, thank you for the suggestion. We will look into it. Sarabies writes in with
Sarabies.
That's all he said. He said, Sarabies. Oh, yeah, no, it didn't play in the studio.
Sarabies.
There you go. Nice. Woke Poppy writes in on Twitter, the fire in Orange County was visible from Disneyland. Smoke covered Orange County for days. Laura Gelizunas writes in, humans keep destroying the planet. There is no planet B. The earth will continue to spin with or without humans. And finally, Matthew Reed says, Trump is actually going to bankrupt America because he's trying to compensate for something. That is unfortunately also true. Okay, now, if you are anywhere near Vegas on Wednesday, I need you to go to Bally's and meet John Iderol. What
I'm gonna
in
be
the
gambling.
World? That's right. Okay, bring
I
money.
I have a problem.
No, the Unity Reform Commission is meeting on Wednesday at Bally's in Las Vegas at 1 p.m. And John's gonna go over there, do some interviews. But they're discussing some really, really important issues, including superdelegates, whether we should have them or not, primaries versus caucuses, Democratic Party reform. And we want to shine a spotlight on it because almost no one else is covering it. And this is when they make the decisions on how they are going to run those incredibly important primaries for 2020. So if we want to make sure that they're done right and the right rules are in place, this is the time to act, not 2 years from now.
Yeah.
So join John there. But if you're wondering, okay, how am I going to get info on that? Go to tytnetwork.com/getupdates because then we will text you guys or email you, etc., and let you know where and when exactly you could meet John. But again, anywhere near Vegas on Wednesday, go to Bally's and make your voice heard. This is the time that the Unity Reform Commission needs to hear from you. They often hear from the lobbyists, but they should hear from you guys.
And there are people who are going to be there arguing, I don't know what the argument for superdelegates at this point is, but they will be arguing for these sorts of things. And many of them are counting on that no one will be there aside from the people debating. There's not going to be, nobody's going to be paying attention, nobody's going to show up. But imagine if they have to walk through a crowd of people signs and chants, making it clear what they expect to come out of these meetings. That will have an effect.
No, that's absolutely right. And the reason is just, it's not to for us to have an unfair advantage. It's the exact opposite.
No, I'm fine with that.
No, it's because we have the people, they have the folks in power. So a lot of these folks, and a lot of them are well-meaning. There's 9 Hillary Clinton people, but 7 Bernie Sanders representatives on the Unity Commission. That's why it's the Unity Commission. But they live in the DC, a lot of them live in the DC bubble or in the Democratic Party bubble. And so all they ever hear is from consultants and lobbyists and other folks in the establishment who think superdelegates are awesome and, you know, and different ways of spreading out power. For example, open primaries so more people can vote and more people can join the Democratic Party. They think that's a bad idea. They've somehow convinced themselves of that. So if you think otherwise and you want to strengthen the Democratic Party by involving people more, this is a great opportunity to do it. So go see John in Vegas on Wednesday. All right, okay. John, what's next?
So after it was revealed that Donald Trump wants to build about 32,000 additional nuclear weapons at the cost of countless trillions of dollars, he didn't like that reporting had come out. He didn't like the reaction that it had. And so he responded by threatening to shut down media outlets that were critical of him. He tweeted this, with all the fake news coming out, didn't he come up with that word, fake? With all the fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, capital, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license, capital? Bad for country. That's our president right there, kids. So challenge their license as in his belief is that he can, as president, take away the ability of places like NBC to broadcast, because of course the government has a role in the licensing of the public airwaves to allow information to get out there, for shows to get out there. What he doesn't seem to understand is that the FCC is not involved with networks in that way. It would have no ability to stop NBC as a whole from broadcasting. It has to do with very particular local things. He doesn't get that. He tweeted another thing. Fake NBC News made up a story that I wanted a quotes tenfold increase. You just put tenfold increase in our US nuclear arsenal. Pure fiction made up to demean NBC equals CNN, which is something many of our viewers would probably agree with that last part. MSNBC anyway. So pure fiction. Now, when a report like the NBC News report comes out, you can't be sure that it's true just because NBC News, it's, you know, that they check things. You can't be sure. But when he responds in this way, you know it's true. That's the pattern with Donald Trump. Now we're gonna have some video in just a second. But I know that there's a big debate between people who think that this is just bluster to take us off the real issue versus those who are worried that this is a guy who will do what he can to shut down media outlets like a tin pot dictator that are critical of him and that we should take it seriously.
Yeah, so there's a legitimate issue here, and then of course there's Donald Trump. So the legitimate issue is, you know, these folks were given the public airwaves and they weren't charged anything. In return, they were supposed to provide public information and news. And then at some point, they were like, just kidding. We're gonna turn news into a profit center. So they twisted news into something that it was never meant to be. So I don't want to get into a long history of that, but the bottom line is, if he were to say, look, I'm going to treat all of the TV stations fairly, equally, but now they have to pay for the public airwaves, well, that would be a really interesting conversation, right? Or provide some sort of public service, because are they really providing a public service now?
The vast majority of the ones he has a problem with are not public, they're cable, like they already are doing that in many cases.
Yeah.
You're right, it's a big conversation.
So that's an interesting intellectual conversation that people have from time to time. That is not the conversation Donald Trump is having. So a guy who says, bad for country, is not having an intellectual conversation. And random letters equals random letters. NBC equals CNN. What is that? Anyway, so no, he's saying, I want to punish people who are speaking against me. Well, that would be the single most unconstitutional thing you could do, because the government cannot impede your freedom of speech or the freedom of the press. That is clearly lined out. It can't be any clearer than it is in the First Amendment. So when he says, me no like what you say, NBC bad, like CNN bad, I don't want to punish the other guys. Fox News is awesome. They don't have to pay for the public airwaves or anything like that.
I read today he calls Sean Hannity after most of Sean Hannity's shows.
Okay, but me no like you. Okay, me shut your speech down.
Yeah.
Well, then you don't believe in America, because I mean, this, come on. All the right wingers who cry about Milo or Shapiro and all these guys and their freedom
of
speech.
Where are they?
Yeah, I mean, you doesn't get any more freedom of speech than the government.
Where are the classic liberals?
Where are the classic liberals? The government saying that if you say something wrong about the government, we will shut you down.
Yeah.
So the guy doesn't understand America. He doesn't understand democracy either. He just wants to be king.
Yeah,
he's like, why won't they just do what I tell them to do?
Yeah.
Why do I have to work with a Congress or a court system or the press? No, I won. And he thinks I'm the president means I'm the king, I'm the dictator. You now have to do whatever I tell you. That's not how our system of government works.
Yeah, and we have an international audience. And so I'm sure that there are people watching the show right now that live in countries that at one point had a free press and then found that it was taken away from them by people like Donald Trump in their own country. So feel free to comment about your experience. Hopefully we will never experience it, but we can still learn from your experience. And finally, if you're one of the people that is attempting to maintain your mental health by only occasionally checking in on Donald Trump, let alone with his tweets, you might think, okay, this is just another one of his random blusters. So like it's a threat. He comes up with stuff like this all the time. But this is not a random new thing from Donald Trump. These threats to tighten up our libel laws and to look into media outlets, that is a pattern that he has gone to a number of times since the campaign, during the campaign, and in his private life long before the campaign. This is a man who has been attempting to sue out of existence anyone who criticized him for literally decades. So please do not make the perhaps fatal mistake of assuming that this is just a threat that he would never follow through on. He has already in his private life done what he can to shut down criticism of him. And there is no reason to believe that he would not do it as president. Now, some more corruption for you. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Health and Human Services Secretary, Tom Price, was forced to step down from his position because of a scandal involving his use of private planes paid for by taxpayers. Well, it looks like he might maybe not be alone for that much longer because there's another secretary who's involved in a similar sort of activity. And let's see if we can get some discussion going around that. This is Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who has attended at least two additional political fundraisers while traveling for official business, meaning business you paid for, including a weekend ski getaway. That sounds nice. I've never been on one. He's held at least a half dozen other events with big donors or influential conservative organizations while on official trips. And again, official trips, that just means trips you paid for him to go on, and yet he's going off and having fun with these donors and raising money for political purposes. And it's weird because it almost seems like they should outlaw that or have rules to regulate it. And they do. The Hatch Act and other federal laws allow cabinet secretaries to participate in partisan political activities only if they do so on their own time and do not use any governmental resources, which is a difficult case to make when you have literally flown through the clouds on a ticket paid for by me and Cenk and JR over there. Now, they've looked into it. The FEC records show that the campaign committees don't list any reimbursement payments to Interior for the events. And so while they are attempting to cloud the waters by saying that they've listened to the Office of Ethics inside of the White House and they've comported themselves based on those rules, it is clear at this point that they have not. And a number of these fundraisers he's gone to are the sort of events where people are paying $2,000 to $5,000 for photos or to shake his hand, raising massive quantities of money while being there ostensibly for official business that we hope he still is paying attention to, that he's still doing his job, but he sure seems busy with ski resorts.
So first of all, John, I have been on ski getaways.
Oh yeah?
Yes, I'll tell you about it in the post game because there are fun stories from the old days of chicken nuggets and not paying for the expensive burgers in the ski lodge.
So you're a regular Zinke.
That's right. So we'll do that in the post game for the members, tytnetwork.com/join to become a member and get all the post games. Okay, now on to Zinke. In one of the trips, he's like, no, that's true, I went to a fundraiser, but I also had official business. What'd you do? I toured Yellowstone. Okay. Now, look, to be fair, he is the Interior Secretary.
Yeah.
Okay. But
he's probably busy finding areas of it that he can sell off to private corporations.
That's right. He's like, do we have oil here? Do we have oil? Okay.
I think he's using copper.
So he could go to Yellowstone. I mean, if I'm the Interior Secretary, I probably want to see Yellowstone at some point. But let's put a couple other meetings around it so we don't waste taxpayer money so that, you know, when we go there, it's kind of worthwhile. No, he wanted to go to the fundraiser and he wanted to find an excuse to go to the fundraiser. He's like, oh, I got it, Yellowstone's nearby. Mm-hmm. Let's go walk through the park.
Yeah.
Come on. So,
I mean, look, this isn't corruption of the sort that like you pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to a football game purely to leave to gin up racial strife in the country. It's not that bad. It's not Pence bad, but it's bad.
Yeah. And they just don't respect the rule of law. That's the great irony. You know, that's Trump's main speech during this convention was, we're going to bring back law and order. But the reality is the Hatch Act is super clear. Anybody who goes in the White House knows it. It's one of the first things that you get orientation on. Hey, here are the rules. Here's what you can and can't do. They know they're not supposed to use taxpayer money to go do fundraisers where they basically get legalized bribes. But they don't care. They think, no, Trump has done everything and broken every rule and still gotten elected. So kiss my ass. I'm going to use your money. I don't care. I'm going to take your tax dollars, even though I've been saying my whole life that, oh my God, taxpayer dollars is sacrosanct. And I'm going to use it to raise more money for my big donor friends. And raising money from donors now has become so complex. For us, it's still a little revolting. You know, you hear about it and you're like, oh, these guys go and couples paid $5,000 to have their picture taken with Zinke. Oh, I mean, I can't imagine anything more that's more wasteful than that.
I told JR they could have saved money, just go to a deli, find a guy, take a picture with him, say it was Zinke. No one will know. Who's going to call you on that?
Right, but of course, so they, I guess they want the picture, but really what they want, of course, is favors.
Yeah.
And so we've all gotten used to it, but everybody in Washington, which is a swamp, thinks, what do you mean? I have to go get suck up to donors and take pictures with them and then hear the favors they would like. What do you mean? Yeah, that's called bribery and we should never get used to it. We just made it legal. We have to make it illegal again and regain our democracy. Wolf-pack.com. You know, the next time Ryan Zinke goes to Yellowstone or anywhere else, you know what I'd love for him to run into? A wolf pack. Okay, just the political kind.
Wait.
Just the political kind.
Okay.
Not the real kind. Wolf-pack.com. Get money out of politics.
Yeah. We're going to take our second break of the hour. When we come back, a congressional pharmacist reveals a prescription he has to write for congressmen that is terrifying.
Back on the Young Turks, two tweets for you guys. Lentil Soup writes in, too many dictators have grabbed power because the opposition kept underestimating what they would do. Agreed there. I was talking about this on yesterday's program. Yesterday, I had this feeling of doom that I had right before the election, that we're underestimating how stupid he is. I know I keep saying it, I'm sorry guys, but how much damage he's going to do. Everybody thinks everything will be fine. No, things will not be fine.
Yeah, we haven't had the taxes yet.
And that guy, that maniacal, staying in power for that long, he's going to break something and it's going to be really bad. All right, anyway, J. Thomas Gordy says, Trump calling out fake news is the presidential equivalent of that kid that screams, nuh-uh, when another kid calls him out. It's 100% true. J. Thomas Gordy, nice. You made us LOL, get a t-shirt, brother. ShopTYT.com. Now we got the nasty t-shirts for nasty woman. You know, the mayor, of course you didn't, you were in the North Pole. You know, Puerto Rico was flooded, did you notice?
What the hell? Yes, I knew that.
and the mayor of San Juan was wearing the nasty t-shirt.
I did see that, yeah.
So ShopTYT.com. All right, what's next, John?
Okay, the son of Alabama Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore has apparently been arrested for the 9th time. Jeez. Now, this is his son who isn't running, so you might think, well, why do we really care? But we're going to give you a couple of reasons to care. Here is a photo of the 9-time arrestee, Caleb Moore, there, who seems to kind of like it.
Yeah, he looks like such a spoiled prick.
He doesn't seem to mind.
Yeah.
I think, look, it's hard to tell from just one photo, but I diagnose him with a little bit of affluenza. Yeah. But anyway, he was charged with a third-degree criminal trespassing, a misdemeanor related to another misdemeanor charge from November 2016 for hunting without a permit. So, yeah, that'll get you in trouble there. Now, they are related, of course, so maybe you can lump those together. Now, Judge Moore's campaign chairman, Bill Armistead, said that this is a, quote, cheap political trick to detract from the real issues facing our country. And I agree, it is a cheap trick. I don't know why Caleb Moore is pulling these tricks and getting arrested all the time. Stop it, you're distracting your father. But anyway, now Caleb Moore back in 2015 said something very similar during one of the other many times that he's been arrested, saying this is nothing more than a prime example of how media and crooked police officers and critics of my dad try to not only destroy his career for what he stands for, but will go as far as trying to destroy his family. Again, yes, that is, it is terrible, so stop doing it. He's, by the way, he's also been charged with DUIs in Alabama and Florida and had three other drug related charges in three separate Alabama counties. He has been busy.
Yeah, in 2015, he also had a charge for when he was caught with marijuana and Xanax. Look, it's not a crazy thought that there are politically related arrests in the state of Alabama.
Yeah.
Karl Rove famously orchestrated the arrest of Don Siegelman, who was the governor and who was a Democrat and ruined his career and actually sent him to prison. It was one of the most outrageous political tricks of all time. So Republicans in that state might be thinking, what do you mean? We do this all the time. You know, we bury people totally unfairly. Now, in this case, really? They're going to go after a guy whose son they had no idea that Roy Moore would run for Senate. He just ran for Senate this year. But just in case, they arrested his son eight other times in the past.
Just in case.
And they were like, hey, they called up the state of Florida. Hey, that guy's probably driving drunk again. Can you go get him for political reasons?
Yeah.
Or perhaps the eight other arrests were just because he's a knucklehead.
Yeah.
And probably the ninth one as well. And I don't think you have to look that far to find Caleb Moore breaking the law.
No.
So
it doesn't seem that difficult.
Yeah.
Now look, as we said, he's effectively a, you know, he's related to someone who's running for office, a very high profile and got a nasty guy with a terrible history and reputation, but he's still basically a private citizen. So you would be fine to think that maybe this doesn't really matter, but it does kind of matter because his father's been a judge for a long time. This is clearly someone who believes that his family connections allow him to do whatever he wants. And I would say more importantly, although perhaps a less high profile issue, is many of these things that he's been arrested for, other than like the DUIs, marijuana charges and things like that, how about we not have them be illegal? How about we not have ultra conservative people like Caleb Moore's dad making it so that people can get routinely arrested a number of times for consuming something that is far less bad for you than the alcohol that everyone around us is drinking constantly?
Yeah, I would legalize marijuana so you wouldn't have gotten arrested for all those
exactly.
things. You know, and like some of it is like hunting without a permit. If you're, you didn't get the right permit because you were had driven drunk there. Okay, I understand, right? If you're shooting a gun in your backyard, I don't understand, that's dangerous. So it depends on the circumstance, right? So look, I don't care about the kid. He seems like he's incredibly spoiled, but on the other hand, he's Roy Moore's son. That couldn't have been a good way to grow up, right? I mean, his dad's a massive prick.
So he's not really the important part of this. It's everything around it.
Yeah, but it does get under folks' nerves a little bit because you know that if you were arrested eight times, you wouldn't have been able to be arrested nine times because you'd be in prison serving a pretty long sentence after three DUIs, etc. Unless your daddy was a judge who ran on law and order, except when it applies to his own son.
Exactly.
So now that he's been arrested the ninth time, here comes daddy to the rescue again, pretending that it's a political vendetta to get his son out for the ninth time.
Yeah.
He just means law and order for poor people, not for himself or his family.
Exactly. Okay, one more story, are we done?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay, one more. For a number of decades now, members of Congress have had access to a little known clinic and pharmacy very close to the House of Representatives that's run through a membership program. Through this clinic, they can gain easy access to drugs very close to their place of work without, for the most part, having to deal with regular people or have it be clear that, you know, they're going for those drugs and things like that. Now, this by itself is not necessarily all that important or all that interesting. But recently, the pharmacist at that little pharmacy has come out and talked a little bit about some of the prescriptions that he's been giving without being too specific. And so we want to give you information about the clinic and also the consequences legislatively coming out of the clinic. Now, it's the deliveries of these drugs that come for the basically private use of the representatives, go to the office of the attending physician, and Navy doctors perform like basic triage of medical emergencies. Like, you want to have it very close in case there's a problem. They had a period decades and decades ago where several representatives died in a short period of time. So it makes sense at that point that they had it. It makes a little bit less sense now when there's a CVS on every corner.
That was in 1928.
Exactly. Now, at its busiest, it sends as many as 100 prescriptions to members in a day, which is not exclusively to representatives, but it's mostly to them, and that's a lot. Now, there are many prescriptions that a person can get. The average American diet is horrendous, and so it's our natural destiny that we will end up on various forms of drugs at some point in our life. But there are ones that make you stop and make you think just a little bit. So this is Mike Kim, the pharmacist, talking about his experience and says, at first it's cool, and then you realize I'm filling some drugs that are for some pretty serious health problems as well. And these are the people that are running the country. He listed treatments for conditions like diabetes, which is fine, and Alzheimer's, which seems a little bit more consequential. And he goes on to say, it makes you kind of sit back and say, wow, they're making the highest laws of the land, and they may not even remember what happened yesterday.
Mike Kim is definitely gonna get in trouble.
Yes, Mike Kim is screwed. Now, like, he didn't reveal exactly who it went to. Maybe he hasn't broken the law. I would take a vacation if I were you.
No, I'm not concerned that he broke the law. But you know, look, and he didn't say Republican or Democrat. In fact,
the one example
he gave was of, and not in related to any Alzheimer's or diabetes or anything. He just gave the example of John Kerry, who's a Democrat. He said he came in the day after he lost the election. Mm-hmm. And he's like, isn't that amazing? That guy could have been the president of the United States. He was surrounded by Secret Service. The next day he's a schlep waiting for, you know, waiting in line for his drugs at the pharmacy, which that's, I actually love that about America.
Yeah.
I wish we had that happen more. So it's not political in that sense, but nor do I think it's a violation of law. I just feel bad for him because I feel like lawmakers are gonna be like, you let people know that half of us are getting prescription for Alzheimer's and we don't know what the hell we're doing? Mm-hmm. That could be trouble for
him. Yeah, and I noticed, so this was, I think I originally saw it on a Raw story, I believe. And the comments were almost universally, apparently conservatives saying, the Dems on drugs, it's probably Schumer, it's probably Pelosi. Like, that's what you're scared of? The people who have absolutely no power or ability to enact laws, that's what you're worried about, that they have Alzheimer's? How about the people who are actually passing the bills? How about the, like, I'm not even gonna name names, but let's think back to some political events of this year. Were there any, perhaps, Republicans who had weird difficulties expressing themselves and remembering things?
No.
I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying. And now you hear Alzheimer's, and like my grandfather actually is pretty deep in Alzheimer's at this point. It's a very debilitating and a very sad condition that affects a lot of Americans. But we don't know that they're at the deep end of Alzheimer's. Maybe they're just at the very beginning. And so I looked up the early stages of Alzheimer's, and here are some of the effects that it has. Problems coming up with the right word or name, fine. You have a little bit of trouble speaking, that's not a big deal. Trouble remembering names, challenges performing tasks in social or work settings, forgetting material that one has read, losing or misplacing objects, increasing trouble with planning or organizing. Those are things that it does not take a big leap of logic to figure out how that could affect a person that's working in a legislative setting or working in committee meetings or any of that. Now, as really fast, as JR pointed out at today's production meeting, the only thing saving us here is that none of these representatives or senators actually make up their own mind. They just vote the way their donors tell them to. So perhaps the Alzheimer's doesn't really matter at the end of the day. But it is still worrisome.
Yeah, well, that's partly where I was going with this. First of all, to be fair, the pharmacy also services staffers, lobbyists, and family members. So not everybody getting the Alzheimer's medication is in Congress, but very likely some are. And staffers are younger. And so this does go to two actual problems. One is that the people in Congress are uniformly incredibly old on average. I mean, Dianne Feinstein just said she's running for re-election. She's 84.
She's 84?
Yes, by the end of her term, she would be 90 or 91, okay? So, and the reason is, once you have money and power, and you've got a good donor base and good name recognition, you just hang on for dear life.
Yeah.
And they stay there, and they're ancient. And in my opinion, the corruption sets in and it calcifies. So that's the bigger problem. Guys, don't worry about that. They don't remember the bill. They never read the bill in the first place. So remember that talking point that Republicans had about the Democrats? Oh, you didn't read the Obamacare, did you? Later, they went on to say, they bragged how they didn't read their own legislation. Yeah. And that was only 13 pages.
Yeah.
They never read it.
There's a lot of things they have to do that are not reading or voting on bills as well, though.
No, there's only one thing they read, the email from the donor, which tells them which way to vote. Okay, so the Alzheimer's unfortunately is the least of our problems in this corrupt system. Okay, I actually do want to do the Megyn Kelly story. We're going to do it real quick.
Okay.
Go for it.
Man, I thought that polar bears would get me. I didn't think that I would die from a shiv from Anna Kasparian for running too far into her hour.
That's coming.
But it's going to happen. Okay, let's see. Megyn Kelly's new show is apparently having problems. But the problems aren't just for Megyn Kelly. The show is performing so poorly that it's actually dragging down other shows on the network. Apparently, Megyn Kelly Today, which I don't think existed when I left, is attracting 32% fewer viewers than the same time slot on that channel a year ago, which that's trouble. Now, according to an unnamed source inside of the show, not only are ratings plummeting since Megyn Kelly joined the Today franchise, but the numbers show Kelly's lead-in has also affected Kathy Lee Gifford and Hoda's show as well, which follows straight afterwards. Normally, like, you want a good show so that then you do well. They've taken huge hits, 26% ratings plunge. And they have tons of data from previous years to compare this to. So it's not difficult to figure out what the important variable is there. The unnamed source went on to say too many people are tuning out NBC. Hoda and Kathy Lee had been a bright spot in the mornings. People are alarmed.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of television is about demographics, who's watching which channels at what time. So there's all these different, so women are more likely to watch midday and historically and today. There's now a bigger African American audience per capita watching than white folks and at least for television, certainly online is completely different, right? And it is a much older demographic on TV than it is online. And you might think, hey, older might help Megyn Kelly. She's from Fox News, and the average age of the Fox News viewer is 108. I'm kidding, but it's not that far off. It's 68 years old.
It was years ago. God only knows what it is.
Right. And so, but for whatever reason, she's not connecting with that audience. Plus, look, everybody's ratings are going down. It's television. People are cutting the cord.
Yeah.
But so. And give it a chance. Like, people panic too early. And look, I'll use my own experience. When I first went to MSNBC, my ratings dipped a little bit because there was three giant news events that helped CNN. It was Bin Laden's capture, Fukushima, and the Egyptian revolution. Mm-hmm. Those are all moments when people turned to CNN's cameras. Oh, what's happening in the streets in Egypt, in the nuclear meltdown, etc. But we just kept doing the show the right way that we knew we were good at and we're going to deliver on. And then my ratings went way up after those were over, and after I was criticizing Democrats even more, along with, of course, my furious criticism of Republicans, and we wind up pulling out of it, and actually having the highest ratings they ever had at 6 o'clock, which helped, by the way, Hardball, because I was Hardball's lead-in.
Yeah.
He was my lead-in at 5 o'clock, and then they repeated at 7. So. People tend to panic early.
Mm-hmm.
Just calm down, let it find its audience and its voice. And I think that it was a mismatch from the beginning. And I think that they're looking at it from a old school TV way of like, oh, she's a pleasant, attractive anchor with a nice smile. What we need in the mornings is a nice smile. This is like 1955 way of thinking. I don't think that that's applicable today at all. And they thought, well, we'll just take her and put it in. But the part that I think drives a lot of people crazy, and apparently also including inside NBC, is her salary.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So Matt Lauer is the highest paid employee at NBC. He gets $25 million a year. Okay. Megyn Kelly is now number two. All the people who worked at NBC for all their lives, I mean, forget the camera guys, etc., which you shouldn't, okay? But all their anchors, etc. Sorry, Megan's now number two at $23 million a year. Okay, so now some people got on our case because they said, oh my God, you raised $20 million in financing to help your company grow. One anchor who got famous on Fox News for saying Santa's definitely white, okay, makes $23 million a year.
Yeah.
And she just puts it into her pocket. She doesn't build a company. She doesn't get you a nice app.
Yeah. You want to have fun, figure out what that breaks down to per episode of her show.
Okay. So, but look, likely it's guaranteed. I think she has a 3-year deal. So she's going to make $69 million
That's crazy.
No matter what. But there should be some degree of accountability. So it's one thing if your ratings go down 32%. It's another thing if you're making $23 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, the reason that I wanted to talk about this, like we don't normally comment on people's ratings, like we don't normally care about that, but I think that it's, especially with her transition from Fox News over, and then the fact that she had her interview show, and then apparently while I was gone, she suddenly has this new show. Mm-hmm. It's the phenomenon on TV where once you're in, like you're just in forever. You could, every one of your predictions can be wrong. You can say stupid, asinine things constantly. It doesn't matter. They will shuttle you between shows and formats and time slots until you eventually retire. And you don't, at a certain point, even need to perform. And it's because they don't understand what makes people watch something or not watch something. They just think she's a name. We can stick her in any kind of show and the audience will go. And she didn't need to prove herself on that network. It was instantly $23 million. That's crazy. And people hear that and they think, Megyn Kelly making the $23 million a year, how the hell does she know anything about what my life is like? I mean, she's not commenting on news as much anymore, but it's just such a disconnect between the executives and regular people and what they think regular people want, between regular people and the anchors who live the lives of sultans and kings of the days of old.
Yeah, and look, it's not necessarily their fault. I mean, if somebody gave you $23 million, you'd probably take it.
Right? I would. Yes. Offer it to me, please. Yeah.
But it becomes a disconnect when everyone you know in your circle is a millionaire, really, really wealthy. It's a little harder, apparently, to care about the minimum wage being $7.25. I mean, that gets you about $15,000 a year. For her, that's like, I don't know, about a minute of her show.
It's probably 5 to 6 minutes of one of her shows.
So is it any wonder that the guys on TV can't relate to you guys and they don't even know it? To them, they're like, what do you mean? No, I know some people in the middle class making $300,000 to $500,000 a year. Right? Like, no, that's not the middle class.
No.
That's actually really rich, just not anywhere near your level of rich. So, yeah. Again, I think that they should give her a chance, keep going, let it try to find, and let her be authentic. You guys are watering her down. She's gonna be a raging conservative. Let her be a raging conservative. Yeah. You're gonna be far better off. And since they have such an expensive contract, they'll let her run for quite a while. And so I'm not hating on her, and God bless her, we'd all like to make that kind of money. But there is a disconnect between the folks on TV and the rest of us for good reason.
I would say just give her a chance until she like claims that, you know, Santa Claus is white or has a history of saying racially inflammatory things or attacking people based on their race. If she developed that sort of history, look it up, then you could say maybe she doesn't deserve an additional chance.
Yeah. All right.
Look it up.
Now we gotta go. All right. We have a lot more stories for you guys, including you're gonna be shocked to find out that a white supremacist who beat down an African American guy and sent him to the hospital was lying about the black guy that he beat down. But you know, the thing is that's so maddening is the cops immediately trusted him and arrested the black guy he had assaulted.
Based on shaved hair alone.
All right, I'm gonna tell you that story. Anna's gonna tell you that story when we come back.